Broadcasting from just outside the nation's capital, Wrongthink Radio brings you the facts and analysis you need, devoid of liberal media bias. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Wrongthink Radio's Ride to Work.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Wrongthink Radio's Ride to Work. I'm your host, Aaron Bierlein, broadcasting from right next to the nation's capital in beautiful Northern Virginia, and welcome to the intersection of common sense and facts. Now, if you guys like what you hear today, I really need to strongly encourage you guys to go over to subscribestar.com/wrongthinkradio and become a Subscribestar for us. That is basically how we make our bread and butter. We're entirely independent, and we basically completely rely on the support of our listeners and our viewers over at youtube.com/wrongthinkradio. And that is our method of making sure that we bring you guys the facts devoid of any sort of liberal media bias. And that also includes us not having to try to sell you guys anything crazy, or at least, you know, not yet, because let's be honest, if we don't get enough subscribers, we are at some point going to have to actually sell products so we can pay the bills and fund all of this equipment. Long story short, go over to subscribestar.com and become a subscriber. It's, I think we set the price at $2.99. I'll have to remember. I'll have to actually look at it again because I think the initial prices were a little high. But more onto that. Let's get into the news of the day. The hard left swing of Democrats has left the media with no choice but to look insane trying to defend the hyperbole, emotional rhetoric, and outright lies that the Democrats have propagated over the last few years or more to influence their base through fear and deception. We have a few stories here to show not only the typical collusion with the media, but the fact that there is no way that the apparatchiks in the media can write these stories without thinking that they are selling all of their credibility for the hope of a 2020 victory. Let's first take a look at an AP story that has to keep the doomsday abortion rhetoric turned up to 11 after decades of lies from Democrats that regulating abortion was going to result in a tragic back alley deaths of millions of women because they couldn't use the safe, legal, and rare option. The Associated Press released a story yesterday dripping with emotion about the horrors women face in Texas after their new abortion laws took effect. The AP goes through the trials and tribulations of these women who have had their rights ripped from them and the tumultuous journey they had to undergo to kill their babies. That's right, folks. The AP wrote an entire story because women have to travel 250 miles for an abortion. David Crary, who shouldn't be writing stories for the AP on abortion because he's a white man, writes, after 7 years past sweeping abortion bans, After 7 states passed sweeping abortion bans this year, speculation soon arose about the potentially onerous travel burdens the laws could someday impose on women seeking to end unwanted pregnancies, also known as murdering babies. Across a huge swath of West Texas and the Panhandle, there's no need for speculation. The nearest abortion clinics are more than 250 miles away, despite the region having several mid-sized cities and population of more than 1 million people. Quote, I've been telling folks, if you want to see the future, we've been living that since 2012, said Denise Rodriguez of the Dallas-based Texas Equal Access Fund, which helps women across much of the state pay for abortions they could not otherwise afford. Faced with drives of 4 hours or more to Fort Worth, Dallas, El Paso, or out-of-state clinics, many women need at least 2 days to obtain an abortion, a situation that advocates say exacerbates the challenges of arranging childcare. Sorry, I have to laugh a little bit about worrying about people arranging childcare for when they go to murder a child. I digress. Taking time off work and finding lodging. Some end up sleeping in their cars. This seemed like it fits the bill as rare, which the left promised would be the case of abortion. but it also proves that the doomsday scenario to the left that the left pushed, that women would be dying in alleyways if they couldn't abort a baby within minutes, was all just emotional fear-mongering because for some reason the Democrat Party is obsessive with killing babies. The story goes on. The closures have increased the caseload for Fund Texas Choice, a statewide nonprofit. It doesn't pay for abortions, but covers patients' other costs, including transportation and lodging. Sarah Lopez, the fund's program coordinator, says many requests come from the Panhandle, where clients often must endure a round trip of 700 miles or more. Now, notice that they had to use round trip because 350 miles doesn't sound that far. Also, you can make this trip in a weekend. Many abortion seekers don't even realize how far away clinics are until they start looking, she said. Among recent clients was a 20-year-old Amarillo woman who made a solo 290-mile drive to Albuquerque, New Mexico in June to get an abortion. The unnamed woman, who has to be identified only as Angel to protect her privacy, said she already has two children, 6 months and 2 years old. Well, she probably asked for privacy because her kids don't want to find out through Google search in the future that their sibling was murdered by their mother. As she states, quote, "I knew I couldn't handle another." Now, I just want to take a look at this quote for a quick second. "I knew I couldn't handle another, but I literally did absolutely nothing to stop the process for which that other one would be created, even though I'm well aware of how that process works because I already have two." Just understand right now, that's what these people are advocating for right now, is we are supposed to feel bad for a woman who 100% fully understands how this process works, got pregnant after having a 6 month old child. She gets pregnant again and goes, "Well, I just know I couldn't handle another one. And gosh, it should be the U.S. taxpayer paying for it. I should be given money for this, even though I have plenty of ways to stop it." And the reason why I know she has plenty of ways to stop it is she's about to tell us, we're about to hear about how much it costs. That's what you have to understand, how much it costs. And that amount of money that's being spent, you could have bought condoms or paid for your birth control. That's the deal here. But instead, it's, "I don't want to have to take responsibility, and I need people to pay for what I consider to be a mistake." Let's go on. The trip took 4 hours, 20 minutes, mostly through open desert. She spent the night at a motel before driving back to Amarillo. The abortion cost $450. The fund helped with Angel's motel bill and gas money. So basically, we're supposed to be upset because it's hard for women to get an abortion, and we should allow abortion up until the child registers as a Democrat, because someone had to travel to murder their baby instead of being able to take a $7 Uber ride. This isn't the only ridiculous take in the last 24 hours, by the way. The New York Times is losing their minds because people are doing what they and the rest of the liberal media have made common practice in journalism. But you see, it's happening to them now, so it's totally different. I'm speaking about the New York Times complaining that people are finding unseemly tweets from New York Times reporters and demanding they be fired. You know, like the New York Times and the rest of the liberal media does. Madison Gesiotto, I hope I have that right, Gesiotto, wrote an opinion piece for The Hill. And here it states, "The people who have made an industry out of destroying ordinary people's lives over social media posts and out of context comments are very upset that it's happening to them. The New York Times is clearly worried by the recent exposure of blatantly anti-Semitic tweets posted by one of its reporters, and clearly worried that even more embarrassing material is in reserve. Tried to stop the hemorrhaging with a rambling article demonizing the independent journalists who uncovered the tweets. In fact, much of the liberal media sphere went into panic mode, vehemently declaring that this particular exercise of the First Amendment is actually an attack on the First Amendment. The reason why liberal editors are so distraught that independent conservative journalists are publishing evidence of the racist, anti-Semitic, and otherwise vile statements expressed by their supposedly objective employees comes down, as it usually does, to power. Many journalists are in the profession not to inform the public, but to gain power to destroy people who question them. And they don't like those tactics being turned against them. Using journalistic techniques to target journalists and news organizations is fundamentally different from the well-established role of the news media in scrutinizing people in positions of power, the Times wrote in its article, which was, of course, labeled news and not opinion. The newspaper's publisher, Arthur Sulzberger, added, "The political operatives behind this campaign will argue that they are reporting on news organizations in the same way that news organizations report on elected officials and other public figures." But he roundly rejected the claim, insisting that his antagonists are trying to, quote, manipulate the facts for political gain. Because the media doesn't do that literally all the time. To their credit, not everyone in the elite media is buying it. Eric Wemple of the Washington Post and Jack Schaefer of Politico both wrote rebukes of the Times' indignation. Neither is a conservative political operative, but both found Sulzberger's statements hypocritical and incongruent with the Times' own reporting on this story. As Wemple put it, "For decades now, representatives of the mainstream media have answered conservative critiques by imploring, judge us by the work we produce, not by the fact that more than 90% of us are liberal democratic mainstreamers, cannot have it both ways." Considering that the Times recently held a staff meeting at which employees strategized over the best way to undermine President Trump, Sulzberger doesn't have much standing to complain about the media bias. Clearly, he thinks that his journalists deserve special privileges and protections because the targets of their attacks are so important. Yet the media outlets the New York Times is painting as victims used out-of-context video clips to claim that a group of teenage boys from a Catholic school in Kentucky engaged in a racist attack on an innocent Native American Vietnam veteran. The story was a complete lie, fabricated by left-wing activists and circulated by some of the country's most prestigious newspapers. They did it because those teenagers wore MAGA hats. And in the sick, twisted minds of today's liberal journalists, that makes them and their families legitimate targets. CNN, which the Times also portrays as a victim, went after an obscure social media user for making a meme of the president wrestling a figure with CNN's logo. The Daily Beast, another left-wing outlet, once doxxed a black forklift driver because he posted a meme about drunk Nancy Pelosi. Most hypocritical of all, however, is Huffington Post editor-in-chief and New York Times alumna Lydia Polgreen. She called the prospect of journalists being held to the same standards as their targets extremely alarming, hypocritically arguing that this should worry anyone who cares about independent journalism, even though people now being attacked by the establishment media are acting as independent journalists. In the mind of leftist journalists, destroying people's lives is speaking truth to power, and independent journalism, it's not. It's a pure, shameless abuse of power by those who have it against those who don't. It's a deliberate exploitation of the far-left hate mobs that big tech still allows to organize on social media, even as the tech giants ban conservative users for harassment when they criticize journalists. Just recently, the New York Times complained to a professor's employer about a tweet referring to one of its high-profile columnists, sorry, Freudian slip, right? High-profile columnists as a bedbug. The liberal media have made an art form of digging up controversial tweets in order to attack ordinary Americans who support President Trump. And now that they are being given a dose of their own medicine, they've discovered that they don't like the taste. What goes around comes around, though, and those who live by the social media gotcha game shouldn't be surprised if their eventual undoing comes by the same means. And finally, we have fact checkers who will lie constantly to try and rewrite history and ensure that when a liberal hears something that conflicts with the programming, they will be soothed by a Google search which shows Snopes and PolitiFact agree with their preconceived notions, and they can happily jam their smartphone in your face, claiming that a website says you're wrong and they're right. Granted, that website is literally in the business of covering up truth. Snopes is still too busy to attack. Too busy attacking the Babylon Bee for being satire, so PolitiFact had a hold my beer moment while covering the Trump rally in North Carolina yesterday. This comes from the Daily Caller. Left-leaning fact-checking website PolitiFact butchered the fact of comments that President Trump made about Democratic Virginia Governor Ralph Northam at a rally Monday night. Quote, Trump says Virginia Governor Ralph Northam talked about after a baby was born, the doctor will talk to the mother and make the decision about whether the baby lives. We rated his similar claim about abortion false, PolitiFact tweeted in a live fact check of the Trump rally. There's only one problem when it comes to things like this, especially when it comes to PolitiFact, is that the internet lives forever, and so when they try to rewrite history, we're able to simply just do what I'm about to do, which is click the actual interview in which Ralph Northam said this, and here that is.
No exception. There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you first thing I would say is this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
Now, what you have to understand about that particular quote is he tap dances around a lot, and he actually tries to use a statement where he says, well, right now, this is how it is. But you see, what they were trying to push forward was that abortions, regardless of situation, could be done at that late term. And so he's defending it by saying, well, right now we only really do something if there's a non-viable pregnancy or severe deformity. But he does absolutely support the idea of the third trimester abortion, of it happening, because that's what was being addressed. And so what he said was, yes, Delegate Tran is proposing basically while the child's crowning and at the birth, you can get an abortion. And he said, yeah, like that's okay. And the way that this would work is here's what would happen. And he tries to use the fact of, well, right now this is what we do, but he's using it in the context of this is how we're going to do this. This is how, if Delegate Tran gets what she wants to push in Fairfax County, this is how we would make that occur. Not just Fairfax County. They were trying to push it through the state, but it's like, this is how this would occur. That was the example he was giving. So it's not a lie. It's true, but PolitiFact is trying to cover that up. And don't think that these fact checkers don't do this all the time, either through their silence or through just trying to muddy the waters a little bit to make it sound like it wasn't as awful as what it really was. Now, if you like this analysis, be sure to go over to wrongthinkradio.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, send us an email, which is at contact@wrongthinkradio.com. And like I said earlier in the program, go over to subscribestar.com/wrongthinkradio and become a subscriber and help support our program so we can continue to do this great analysis and bring you guys the truth and be the intersection of common sense and facts. I'm Aaron Bierlein, and I'm keeping an eye on the left.